This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of Ready, Set, Bet on this Selection Sunday here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Femi Bebefe alongside Ben Stevens in for the guys, Matt Brown and Mike Somich, as we celebrate college basketball, the final day of the conference tournaments. Bracket to be revealed later on. In 5 hours, the bracket will be revealed. I think my math is right on that one. It might be totally off. Maybe it's 6 hours.
No, that's right.
It's right. 5 hours. Boom. There we go. The math is right. 6 p.m. Eastern. You know, who knows what time zone we're in? Yeah, we're still getting acclimated to the clocks being sprung forward. But hey, we're here. No excuses. We're ready to play some ball, and we'll be ready to play some ball in 15 minutes with our buddy Greg Hoops Peterson, who will be joining us to break down all things Selection Sunday, his bets for the games that'll be going on a little bit later on today in the Big Ten, in the American. Who does he like? That Purdue-Michigan point spread is pretty interesting there. I'm curious to get Greg Hoops Peterson's thoughts on that coming up in the next segment. We have the SEC Tournament Championship and the A-10 Tournament Championship getting underway here in a matter of moments, doing the introductions in Pittsburgh and Nashville, respectively. Mm-hmm. But, Ben, I wanted to begin this hour because this is going to be the conversation all throughout today, and this A-10 Conference Championship game is a big one. When you want to talk about bracketology, the bubble, who's in, who's out, and what I love the most about this is over at DraftKings, our friends, they have a bubble watch tab. You can bet this stuff. Now, I just refreshed it, and I think the bubble watch tab might not have anybody else available. The bubble watch tab has been taken down, but we have what it was prior to it being taken down and off the board, and our producer, Rick Chapsky, did a great job getting this put together for us here. So let's throw the graphic up right now to show the viewing audience what we're talking about here. And here are some of the teams that are on the bubble: your Auburns, your Miami of Ohio's, which I still think is insane. They're 31-1, and we're talking about them being on the bubble, but hey, whatever. You have your Missouri, your Oklahoma, San Diego State is an interesting one, SMU, Texas, among some others here. Ben, when you take a look at this right now, and I'm sure there are places like the prediction markets where you can get down on this stuff with a little bit different language. Amongst these teams, who do you think is it? Like, Miami of Ohio, they're just in, right? I don't think there's a conversation to be had, or do you disagree?
No, I don't think there's a conversation to be had. If you can play 31 regular season games, even if your strength of schedule is not all that great, and you can win all 31, and you don't make the NCAA tournament, just fast forward to mid-major conference tournament week, and we'll play for 7 days and call it that. Miami, Ohio is in. And Femi, just one thing on my soapbox here that I think was lost in the conversation around the Redhawks as we were getting ready for March, and the idea that if they squandered a game in the Mid-American Conference Tournament, that maybe they would be in peril of missing out on the big dance, that I think was lost, was the wins above bubble rating for this Miami team. It is one of the 12 selection criteria the committee is using as we speak to form the field of 68, and it is quickly becoming their favorite because it is a resume-based metric. It does not necessarily go with the metrics of strength of schedule. We have 365 Division I men's college basketball programs spread across 31 conferences around this great country. You are not going to have scheduling parity or perfect balance within these individual leagues, let alone 365 D1 men's college basketball teams. Think about how mad people get in the NFL for this team having a soft schedule. We had it all year with the Patriots. There's 32 teams in the NFL. We have 365 in Division I men's college basketball. So I bring up WAB because the committee loves it based on assigning a score, pretty technically. How good was your opponent? Where did you play the game? You've got a score out of 0 to 1 based on what the average bubble team, defined as net number 45 in the country, would do in that game. Miami's WAB rating right now is 1.69. It is 37th best in the country. They say if your WAB is 40 or better, you're feeling pretty good come Selection Sunday. So number 37 for Miami. I think that was lost in the conversation of strength of schedule. Who do they play? Non-D1 opponents. The WAB rating was always pretty solid for the Redhawks. They are in. So the minus 3,000 price, I should say, on Travis Steele and his team to make the NCAA tournament feels very fitting to me.
Yeah, I love it. Talk that talk, man. Like it's because like, it just it seems ridiculous that we have to consider Miami of Ohio as being on the bubble. But hey, they're actually on the bubble, and like they might have to play in Dayton, which I still think is kind of crazy. They should just be into Thursday, Friday. I don't think that this team should be playing on Tuesday or Wednesday in the last four in Dayton tournament that we have going on. So Miami of Ohio minus 3,000. Auburn, another team, and Auburn you could probably point to as the team that's sort of talking about strength of schedule because that's what benefits the Tigers. They play in the SEC, and all these teams against quad one, all these games against quad one teams, I should say, it kind of boosts up their net rating and kind of say, hey, look at our strength of schedule. You know, like look at this campaign. Like, it's we were talking about it during the break. If you have to campaign this hard like Auburn is doing, you're probably just not good enough to be in the NCAA tournament. Like it's not like you're like some under the radar program. I mean, you were a one seed last year. You were in the Final Four last year. We're all aware of Auburn basketball. Like everyone's aware. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for Auburn, we were too aware about how bad they were this season. I don't think they're going to get in, but you know, it's part of it is a TV show. Could you see a path to where Auburn hears their name called at 6 o'clock Eastern?
I really, really hope not. I really, really hope not, because then we are getting to an area where high major teams are simply rewarded for being a part of the lucky draw of being in a power conference. We have seen it now in conference realignment. It's not about competitive parity. It's not about competitive balance. It's about TV money. And Auburn has been a team in the SEC for a very, very long time. But if you go 7-11, four games sub 500 in your conference, you had opportunities in those 18 games to not have to flirt with the bubble because of your strength of schedule if you simply win them. Now, Auburn has maybe the best or one of the best wins of this season on the road in Gainesville against the reigning national champs in Florida. I would argue Wisconsin's win on the road in Ann Arbor over Michigan is a better one, but still that's what the Tigers have been campaigning. We have the best win in the sport in the second most difficult schedule, according to Kenneth Pomeroy, in all of college basketball. All well and good. Four games sub 500 in your 18-game schedule. You could have been 9-9, and maybe this conversation changes with another signature win in there. Auburn should not make the NCAA tournament. I don't know if I would lay minus 650 or even bet the 4-1 for them to do so. I really hope that despite Bruce Pearl being on the selection show tonight, Auburn is not an NCAA tournament team in just about 5 hours.
Because like that's the whole part of this conversation. It's not what we think should happen or what we want to happen. It's what we think the committee will end up doing.
Correct.
And they're plus 400 over at DraftKings. Some of the prediction markets, your Kalshis, they have different language with theirs. It's not to make the NCAA tournament. It's to be a round of 64 qualifier, which means like even if they hear their name today, your ticket does not cash. You still need to win in Dayton. Like let's say they're playing in that first four game in Dayton. Like they still need to win that to then cash your ticket, but on the prediction markets, Auburn's at plus 525. So you get a little bit more just because like based on Ken Pom and Bartorvik and all these other sites and stuff, I mean, you put Auburn on a neutral floor against Miami of Ohio, Auburn's probably going to be the favorite. You know, like they're going to be a favorite by a pretty decent chunk. So like, that's why you can get Auburn there at plus 525. It's just that do they hear their name called today on Selection Sunday? How about some of these other teams like San Diego State? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like they were in, then they lose to Utah State. Did the Aztecs do enough in your eyes, or do you think they're on the outside looking in alongside New Mexico in the Mountain West?
Yeah, Femi, I think it's a great question because the Mountain West has been a really strong component of the NCAA tournament basically the last decade. They have had multiple bids to the big dance in each of the previous seven seasons. The last 4 years, the Mountain West has sent at least four teams to the men's NCAA tournament. There is a very likely scenario, as you see those odds, with SDSU at minus 1,100 to miss out on the field of 68. I would say New Mexico probably has even a worse number to make the NCAA tournament, that the only team out of the Mountain West Conference that is seeing the big dance this season is the conference tournament title winner and Jared Calhoun and his Utah State Aggies. That would be the first time in a long time that the Mountain West is a one-bid conference. That would be rather shocking. Those numbers stand out to me. SMU and Texas with the two lowest prices, but both in minus money to make the NCAA tournament feels rather fitting. I believe the committee is going to give Andy Enfield and his Stangs a little bit of credit for having one of their best players and their best scorer in B.J. Edwards come back for the big dance. He did not play in the ACC tournament, was not there for the final few games of the regular season in which SMU was struggling mightily. I do think Texas right now, ESPN's Joe Lunardi, has the Longhorns as the last team in to the field of 68, are probably going to see the NCAA tournament as well. I actually don't think Auburn's biggest beef is with Miami. I think Auburn's biggest beef is with its conference compatriots in Missouri and Texas trying to earn one of those final few spots into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, Missouri minus 1,400. They're also in the last four in on Joe Lunardi's bracketology. SMU out of the ACC, you know, like they didn't have like the greatest showing this week. I mean, they beat Syracuse and they lose to Louisville, which, I mean, it's nothing to scoff at. Louisville's a good basketball team, but that was a game that if they won that, they're probably not having to sweat today. Minus 140. Plus 110 on the no for SMU to miss the tournament. I don't think we're going to get any surprise. If we do get a surprise, who do you think it is? Do you think it's Auburn that ends up making it, or is it Oklahoma? Yeah. Like, we're pretty much talking about the SEC, right? Like, I don't think that they're going to give the San Diego States of the world, your New Mexicos of the world, the benefit of the doubt.
It's tough for New Mexico and San Diego State, who in those games against each other, that trio in the Mountain West, it was always close throughout the entirety of this year. Utah State, SDSU, and New Mexico. I think if there is a surprise, Femi, it is Auburn because of the strength of schedule and the signature victory that is going into the home of the reigning national champs in Gainesville and knocking off Florida.
Yeah. And there's also Dayton right now who's taking on VCU in the A-10 championship that could potentially spoil the party for someone in a couple of hours here, although they trail 8-3 right now in the A-10 championship. We'll tell you more about Profit X coming up a little bit later on the other side. But joining us as well on the Progressive Guest Line when we come back, it's our buddy Greg Hoops Peterson to give us his thoughts, his bets for the conference tournament championship games later this afternoon, as well as what we should expect to see when the bracket is revealed in about 5 hours.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is Ready, Set, Bet. Femi Benfey, Ben Stevens, hanging out with you guys on this Selection Sunday here on VSiN. The good times rolling along right now with college basketball. The Ivy League Penn up 47-46 on Yale. Vandy with an early 9-7 lead against Arkansas. And VCU trying to put some of these bubble teams at ease. They have a 10-5 lead against Dayton in the A-10 tournament championship game. We still have two more conference tournament championship games to get underway, the American and the Big Ten, to wrap things up before the bracket is revealed later on this evening. But to talk all things Selection Sunday, brackets, bets, you name it, we bring on our VSiN teammate, college basketball aficionado, the one and only Greg Hoops Peterson, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Coast to Coast Hoops is the podcast. Make sure you check out Greg Hoops Peterson and Matt Youmans from 8 to 10 Eastern here on VSiN, betting the bracket as Sharp Week begins here at the network. And of course, you can see him on Twitter at GUnit_81. Hoops, happy Selection Sunday to you and yours. I want to ask you about the games happening right now in the SEC and in the A-10, because I know you're always dialed in. I'm sure you have betting opinions on these games, but anything from a live standpoint that you're looking for if you don't have a bet between Vandy and Arkansas, as well as Dayton and VCU?
I want to see in this Arkansas versus Vanderbilt game if either team could take hold down low, because we know the backcourt play for both of these teams is superb. And part of the reason why I did take the under in this game is because both of these teams do a really good job in terms of guarding the three-point line. But if either of these teams can have one of their big men be able to take hold, whether that be Trevon Bazile for Arkansas, whether that be Devin McLaughlin over at Vanderbilt, I think that that gives them a big edge, because, like, I made Vanderbilt a two-point favorite in this game, so it was rather tight for me. I was able to get there with the points with Arkansas, but that said, when it comes to this game, I thought it was probably one of the hardest ones to call on the board, so I want to see if either these teams can have a little bit of an edge down low early on in this game.
Vandy has hit a couple of threes. Tyler Nickel, Duke Miles doing that job for the Commodores in the way that Mark Byington constructs his offense. Vandy, the shortest team in the SEC So defending that paint and defending the offensive glass, Greg, is always paramount for Vanderbilt. We've got two more tickets to be punched with two more conference games to begin later this afternoon before Selection Sunday starts. You, a native of the great state of Wisconsin, I've got some Big Ten pennants for all 18 member institutions behind me as we speak. Let's talk the Big Ten tournament title game between a team that will be on the one line and the one seed of the Big Ten tournament, Michigan, taking on Purdue inside the United Center. It's a 5.5-point spread, Greg, in favor of the Maize and Blue. Total, 149 and a hook. 5.5-point spread for a Big Ten tournament title game. Does it feel like too many points? How competitive do you expect the game to be in Chicago?
And you were getting with Purdue 6+ throughout much of the day. I still do like 5.5 with Purdue. With Purdue, they do such a good job on offense. They are second in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and they do a better job in terms of taking care of the ball. That's the one thing that has really been the undoing for this Michigan team. They are outside the top 185 in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, and I would argue that it's not even because these teams are pressuring them big time. If you looked at that game yesterday against Wisconsin, it was just a lot of errant bag passes, just in general some sloppy offense, and I think that that could cause them a win and cover in this game. For Purdue, I do think that with them having the veterans in the backcourt, Brayden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, that'll serve them well, not just in this game, but moving forward as well. Because when it comes to the landscape of college basketball, these top teams, Arizona, Florida, Duke, along with Michigan, they're all built around their low post play. Typically, guards win in March, and Purdue, they've got very good, very experienced guards. And I think that that's going to serve them well in this game and moving forward. So I like the points here with Purdue. I did take a shot on that over as well with the way that Purdue shoots it well from three.
There we go. This is Ready, Set, Bet. Femi Bebefe, Ben Stevens hanging out with Greg Hoops Peterson, who's with us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Coast to Coast Hoops is the podcast on Twitter at GUnit_81. And make sure you check out Betting the Bracket tonight. Greg and Matt Youmans, 8 to 10 Eastern right here on VSiN. So you mentioned that you like Purdue getting the points against Michigan. I agree with you on that front as well. I think the Boilermakers are actually live to win the game outright. But we've been asking all throughout the show here, based on what we saw yesterday, and I was with you here in studio when Vanderbilt was taking apart Florida in the SEC tournament semifinal. We were opposite sides of the Big East tournament championship between St. John's and UConn. But which of those two teams, Florida and UConn, are you more concerned with heading into the tournament after what we saw on Saturday?
I think in a strange way, I'm a little bit more concerned with Florida, mainly because with that three-point shooting, what are you going to be able to get out of it? Now, out of those two teams, I also think that for the two, and I think that they've got more potential. But at the same time with Florida, they just haven't had the backcourt play be able to step up this season. Boogie Fland has played a little bit better down the stretch. Xavion Lee has played a little bit better down the stretch. But you're going to need a little bit more out of those guys. And I've been saying it with Florida. Right now, their top three-point shooter is Urban Klavsar. He shoots darn near 40% from three-point range. He's been the lone consistent three-point shooter in this backcourt all season long. They've been outside the top three or with regards to three-point shooting percentage. If they get that straight now, like, look up below. This is a team that could potentially win the whole thing. If they don't get that straightened out, though, could they perhaps be that first one seed that gets bounced from the NCAA tournament? So do I have to go with Florida for the fact that I also think that they have the higher ceiling than UConn, but I also think that they have the far lower floor as well.
Greg, you're used to betting a college basketball board that often, whether it's a Tuesday or Wednesday night, features 65 to 70 games, or on a Saturday, maybe 145 plus. So you know these teams, even at the smaller mid-major level, better than probably most when it comes to handicapping college basketball. When the bracket is revealed tonight, of course, everything is matchup dependent. But who are a couple of those teams potentially 12 seed or lower in the big dance that you will have circled, that you will make a point of emphasis to maybe make a magical run here in the month of March?
I think that whoever Northern Iowa draws is big, because if they don't draw like a team of a bunch of bigs, because that's for Northern Iowa, I think is the issue. Northern Iowa, if they face a guard-oriented team, I think they get the job done. They're a top five team in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage. Northern Iowa makes things so slow, so sloppy, outside the top 355 in terms of total possessions per game. We all know the work of Coach Jacobson in the NCAA tournament when his team knocked off Kansas many years ago with Ali Farouk Manesh. So Northern Iowa is one of those teams that I think is interesting. If they can avoid a team that is built around really good bigs, I think that they could be able to win a game or two in the tournament. And then how about High Point? They lose their coach in the offseason. Flynn Cameron does nothing but lead this team to 30 wins. And what I love about teams in March is ones that maximize possessions. How about High Point being a top 10 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis on offense, most turnovers on a per possession basis on defense? And the reason why I look at that is because if you don't turn the ball over, that gives you more scoring opportunities. If you generate turnovers, that gives your opponent fewer scoring opportunities. You want to be looking at that. And I think that High Point being able to maximize the amount of scoring chances that they have in a game makes them very dangerous in the NCAA tournament.
Greg, what we love about you is that you're all the way dialed in on college basketball, 24/7, 365. You love it. You live it. You eat it, breathe it, everything with college basketball. But most people, like, understandably, dive into it today on Selection Sunday. They start watching and say, hey, who's been playing well? Who's doing well? I think a lot of folks are going to have seen these conference tournaments, and they're going to be thinking about your Purdue's or your Arkansas's, your Vandy's, your Gonzaga's, even an Iowa State who lost on Friday night but gave Arizona all they could handle. Do you see any of those teams being capable of winning the national title? We got about a minute left. Like could a Gonzaga at 50-1, pending Braden Huff's health, could they win a national title this season?
I mean, if Gonzaga hasn't done it before, I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it this season. The one team I just keep coming back to, and I mean, they could get blown out early. It could be a case where maybe they have a low ceiling, but I still think Michigan State has potential. Recognize that they got bounced early in the Big Ten tournament, but with this Michigan State group, one of the best defensive teams in all of college basketball, they allow the fewest second chances on the glass and games played away from home of any team in the country, and they have stood up to some of the best offenses in the country, held Duke to fewer than 65 points, held Arkansas to fewer than 70 points. This is a team that time and time again, they make life very miserable for some of the top teams in all of college basketball, battle-tested, play one of the best schedules in the country. I think Michigan State still has quite a bit of potential out there.
Uh-oh, Hoops is saying January, February, Izzo. Here we go. Sparty Party is at 50-1. We'll see how that one unfolds, Greg. I'm on the opposite side. I don't agree, but hey, you know college basketball more than I do. He is Greg Hoops Peterson on Twitter at GUnit_81, Coast to Coast Hoops. And make sure you check him out tonight, Betting the Bracket with Matt Youmans from 8 to 10 Eastern time here on VSiN. Hoops, enjoy today, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Always fun, gentlemen. Thank you.
All right. Well, hey, forget betting the bracket. Forget the bracket. Like, ProfitX is taking March Madness to a whole new level with the King of March. It is here. Win 10 different pregame spreads or totals across 67 games and hit the volume goal on wins or losses, and you're entered to win a trip of your choice. Hit 1,000 in total volume, that's a $5,000 trip. How about 10,000 in volume? That's a 10K trip. Use promo code VSINMM. That's promo code VSINMM.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, man, founded in 2011, the Sharp Plays just completed another dominant run, including a 2025 campaign that saw bankrolls double, 15 straight years of winning, and it's all documented. Records and logs posted publicly at sharpplays.com for full performance auditing, something that separates the Sharp Plays from most of the betting industry. When the Sharp Plays moves, sportsbooks take notice. Advanced AI, trusted insider intelligence, identifying price value before the numbers shift. Respected, watched, feared. Start winning with sharpplays.com. Welcome back. This is Ready, Set, Bet. Femi Abebefe, Ben Stevens here on VSiN. Thank you to our buddy Greg Hoops Peterson, who joined us in the last segment, giving us his thoughts. He is still on the Sparty Party train, 50-1. He says if there's a team that's kind of off the beaten path, off the radar, if you will, it is the Michigan State Wolverines. Do you have that team, Ben, for you right now? Like the top four or five teams aside, which who knows? Maybe this ends up being chalky like we saw last year. But maybe it's like most March Madness tournaments where it's, hey, you maybe get one or two one seeds, and there's some other teams that actually crash the party, if you will. Is there that team for you that could be in like that 50-1-ish range that you think could actually win the national title?
To me, it's not Michigan State. I love it from Greg. To me, it is not MSU. I think the offensive struggles for the Spartans are going to be their undoing, at least in terms of making multiple weekend runs to being in Indianapolis as a part of the Final Four. I still have belief in Iowa State, more than likely on that two line, maybe even a three seed. I think the Cyclones can be there at the end of the day. Going beyond that, Femi, I really think there's probably 8 or 10 teams capable of winning a national champion, but I really do think we are going to see, at least at the end, somewhat of a chalkier NCAA tournament once again. I've looked at the KenPom numbers, pre-NCAA tournament data of the past decade. Three times only in the past 10 years have we seen double-digit teams with a net rating on Selection Sunday of plus 25 or better make it into the NCAA tournament. The most that we had seen pre-NCAA tournament was a season ago with 14. How many do we have on this Selection Sunday? 20 teams on KenPom right now have a net rating of plus 25 or better. And last year, of course, it wasn't just the second ever time all 4-1 seeds reached the Final Four. It was also 3-2 seeds and a 3 seed in the Elite Eight. We might see a couple of round of 64 upsets, maybe a double-digit seed reaching the Sweet 16, something that has happened consistently the last 9 NCAA tournaments. And I do think we can see here, I don't know if it's a mid-major team or a disappointing high-major team in the regular season that found something now in the month of March. I do think when all is said and done, it gets a little chalkier at the end. Maybe it's not all 4-1 seeds in the Final Four, but maybe it's a handful of ones and a handful of twos. I do think we probably see at least Arizona and Michigan in that Final Four, maybe with the likes of a Houston and Iowa State or some others really kind of joining them in Indianapolis.
I think that's going to be the interesting part when the bracket is unveiled, because we've all been talking about, hey, are we going to get the 4 number one seeds for like a month now? Like I don't think that's going to be what's interesting. I think what's interesting is, are we getting 1 versus 2 in the Elite Eight? Like, is that because that's what it was last year? Like you mentioned, it was 1 versus 2, 1 versus 3. It was a very chalky Elite Eight, which made for really good games in the Final Four. Like, I know we all want upsets, but you get big boy versus big boy, then it's all of a sudden it's like, hey, like, these are amazing college basketball games. But I'm curious to see if it gets even that chalky with the teams that the one seeds perhaps beat in the Elite Eight, maybe being 2 or 3 seeds. To me, like, I tend to think that we're going to get a chalky tournament as well, with like the one seeds really flexing their muscles. But if there's a team that I could point to, and I asked Greg about them just because I was curious to see what he would say. He doesn't necessarily believe in them. Like, a couple of times over the last week, I've kind of taken a look at Gonzaga's profile. Like, they are not Mark Few's best team, which I understand why people might be like, you know what, I would not want to back this Gonzaga team. He's had teams that have been one seeds in the past, teams that have been undefeated going to national title night, as we saw them lose to Baylor that year, that Jalen Suggs Gonzaga team. He's had better teams. But one thing that really stands out to me is that this year, Gonzaga is really balanced. And like, one of the metrics that I love, and it's like, this is not like on like KenPom or Bartorvik or whatever. Like, it's pretty simple. Like, I know most people can go out there and take a look at this one. You don't have to have a subscription to look at this. Like, average scoring margin is a pretty predictive metric as to like who's going to be really, really good, who can actually win the national title. Duke is number one. I don't think anybody would like bat an eye about that. It makes a lot of sense. Duke plays in the ACC. They're a really, really good team. They're awesome. Makes sense. Number two is Gonzaga. It's not Michigan. It's not Arizona, which, by the way, Michigan's 3, Arizona's 4, Iowa State is 5. Like, Gonzaga's number 2. And you look at offensive efficiency, you know, Gonzaga's in the top 15. Defensive efficiency, Gonzaga's actually number 1. I don't know if many people think about Gonzaga as like a defensive juggernaut this year, given the conference that they play in. But if they can get healthy, because the big thing to me with Gonzaga, and it's why they kind of sort of petered down the stretch a little bit until they won the WCC last week, like, that Braden Huff injury is a big deal. And I know Mark Few talked to reporters out there in Spokane saying that, like, hey, he's not going to play in this first weekend. Like, he's doubtful for that. But if they can get by that first weekend and get to the Sweet 16, if they can get Braden Huff back, who's a big guy, he can shoot the ball, helps on the defensive end, why can't Gonzaga somehow go on one of those runs? They're going to be a 3 or a 4 seed probably. The Zags are a team that I continue to just look at and say, huh, if they can get healthy and play some really good basketball this weekend, or this upcoming weekend, I should say, maybe they could put a scare into one of these top-seeded juggernauts that we've been talking about for the better part of a month.
The Zags will be a team, Femi, from a betting perspective, I have an eye on for their individual matchups. For the point you just laid out, the Bulldogs this year are much better defensively, perhaps, than in years past, and they focus on defense first, very efficient on that side of the floor. Now, they have one of the best bigs in the sport in Graham Ek, but the scoring is not necessarily as prolific and productive as we have seen in years past for Mark Few clubs. Sweet 16, for sure. Gonzaga and some unders in the first couple of rounds, depending on opponent, no doubt about it. If there were two teams that I was going to take an absolute flyer on with a small, small sprinkle right now, 50 to 1 or greater, one would be a team that sits exactly at 50 to 1. It's Kansas. I still think whatever I decide to do with the Jayhawks in my bracket is going to be wrong. If I have them in the Elite Eight, they're bouncing the round of 64. If I have them losing in the round of 32, they're a Final Four team. I just know that's going to happen today with the Jayhawks, and that's fine. But you have Darren Peterson, who is now fully invested and bought in, it appears, and a really good KU defense, by the way, anchored by Flory Badunga, one of the best in the Big 12 as well. And they've got a lot of talent outside of that. Trey White, Melvin Council Jr., so on and so forth for this Kansas team. The other, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, is UCLA. 130 to 1, the Bruins right now. Ryan mentioned them. Something that even shocked me, Femi. And again, I've got a UCLA flag somewhere. Oh, yeah, there it is. Right there. I got a UCLA flag behind me as we speak. The Bruins have 4 AP top 10 wins this year, tied for the third most in college basketball alongside Texas Tech, only behind Arizona, who has 6. That's the most. And Michigan, who has the second most with 5 top 10 victories. UCLA, and a lot of those have happened in Westwood, which scares me depending on where the Bruins are seated and stacked in this NCAA tournament bracket. They've got a lot to like. Donovan Dent did not play in the second half yesterday of the semifinal against Purdue, dealing with a calf injury. I expect him to be back. I think they just rested him because they understood, hey, we're going to be a 7 seed in the big dance. Nothing we do today or even what happened yesterday probably affects that. They did not have Tyler Bilodeau, who was injured on Friday evening against Michigan State, the Bruins' leading scorer. They've got really good talent on this roster, and they've got a point guard in Donovan Dent, who in his last 7 games entering yesterday's matchup against the Boilermakers had 77 assists to only 6 turnovers. He is playing his finest ball of the year. UCLA could be a team to me that if everything goes right, where they are seated, where they are playing their games, hopefully in the Pacific time zone, and based on how all of that slates out for Mick Cronin and his club, that I think they could be a Sweet 16 or Elite 8 team, and depending on that matchup, maybe even just maybe sneak into Indianapolis in the Final Four. That would be a very, very small sprinkle at a 130-1 price on UCLA on Selection Sunday.
I love a little West Coast flavor here. I'm talking Gonzaga, Benson, UCLA, West Coast, Best Coast on this Selection Sunday. I see it because they have the guard play with Donovan Dent. Donovan Dent, and then, now he has to be healthy. I think they said it was a calf injury, I believe it was, or that something that was bothering him. So as long as that's all good to go, I think UCLA could definitely go on a run in this NCAA tournament. I know people have talked about them in the past, that being St. Louis, the Billikens, and we all saw how it ended yesterday against Dayton. Crazy game, which, by the way, VCU's up 28-19 on Dayton in the A-10 championship game. The bubble, not sweating as much looking at the score there. I think a lot of those bubble teams rooting on VCU to get that thing home there. But yeah, I think St. Louis, if you could look for like who could be a Florida Atlantic type to go back a couple of years ago with Dusty May and that crew, Boyd on that team as well from Wisconsin. Like who could be that type? St. Louis probably fits that mold. There is maybe like your 8-9 seed that could potentially knock off a 1 and perhaps even go to a Final Four. But it's few and far between now in today's college basketball for many a reasons. Portal, NIL, all of that. The big boys are as good as ever, as Ben talked about with the KenPom metrics. We'll update you guys on the Ivy League championship as well as the SEC championship when we come back here on Ready, Set, Bet.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somage on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, it's getting a little thick at the Ivy League tournament for your boy. Welcome back. It's Ready, Set, Bet. Femi Bebe, Ben Stevens on this Selection Sunday here on VSiN. For those of you who were not with us when we began the show at noon Eastern. For one, I say shame on you. Get your priorities in order. But for two, I would say I bet Penn +9.5. Also have some money line at +415. And Penn has been inside the number the entire game. They've also flirted with, like, hey, they might win. They led for a lot of the first half, and they led for portions of this second half. But the Yale Bulldogs have since taken a six-point lead as we have now made our way to the final media timeout of regulation. Yale up 71-65. They are now laying 6.5, total 153.5. I think the dream of the money line ticket is probably dead. I mean, who knows? You know, it looks like, I think Penn's about to go to the free throw line here coming out of the media timeout, so you never know. But I'm starting to get a little concerned about whether they can hang in the number here, Ben. Like with these underdogs that have been winning for a lot of the game and if they're controlling the game, you're just like, man, can we get to the finish line? Just hold on to the rope. Don't let go. But I'm getting a little bit worried about my Quakers here.
Penn had a two-point lead at the break, 41-39. Yeah. Part of that because of an outstanding first half, 23 points, in fact, from TJ Power. He only has 30 in total now, so just 7 in the second half. I mean, we talked about, could the proficiency from three continue for the Quakers? They were 8 of 19 from three in the opening half. You make 8 three balls in 20 minutes in college basketball, regardless of the level you are playing at. That is an awesome thing. It wasn't just making threes. It was also taking threes. 19 of the 34 field goals for Fran McCaffrey's club in the opening 20 minutes from beyond that three-point line. I mean, they've only taken 5 threes in the second half. They made 3 of them, so that's a pretty good clip, 60% to be
exact. Get them up, boys. Come on.
But they've only taken 5, and that's a lot of Yale tightening things up. They are doubling the crap out of TJ Power. They've got the Ivy League Player of the Year in Nick Townsend guarding TJ Power like his life, and NCAA tournament berth depends on it, because it does. And Yale now with under 3 minutes leads by 6. We saw the Bulldogs as a live 5.5-point favorite at the break. They're a live 6.5-point favorite. We saw that total get up to 160 early in the second half, 157 and a hook at the break. It was 141.5. I'm on the under pregame. Not great. 153.5 is that live over under as it stands. I will say this for Penn. They are already in the bonus here in the final 3 minutes. Yale still needs to be fouled twice to get into the bonus. Mm-hmm. So Penn will have some opportunities defensively, Femi, to get some stops and stay within striking distance. TJ Power at the line makes both free throws.
All right.
4-point game with just under 3 minutes remaining in Ithaca.
All right, man, TJ Power, let's go. I need you to get to the line, take a page out of SGA or Luca, their playbook, you know, start to do a little bit of that, you know, that flopping, tilt the head back a little bit to draw some contact, because I think it's going to have to be done via the free throw line. They're not going to let him shoot threes anymore, which is a shame, because Penn is really good at it, and I don't know if they can do anything on the inside. So I need to get to the line, need to start playing some of that unethical basketball you see sometimes, and hopefully
in the Ivy League, unethical ball.
Ethical or unethical, man? Let's use our brains here, Ivy Leaguers. You want to win, or do you want to you want to be ethical? What do you want to do? Because at this point, I do think it's one or the other for the Penn Quakers. we got to get to the free throw line and do it that way. As it looks like Yale, I think, turned the ball over there. So
they did,
hoping that Penn can at worst just hang inside the number. It'd be a shame if somehow Yale covered this number. Like Penn has literally been covering the entire game. Money line, that's a whole nother thing. As right now, Penn is +400. So if you didn't get in on the money line pre-flop, get in at pretty much the same price right now, as that is a 2-point game. Let's go.
We're not done yet. TJ Power back from the break at the line, buries both freebies, then drives to the cup past like a triple team and 3 Yale defenders, gets an easy bucket. He's got 34 of the Quakers' 69 in total, and we'll see if Yale can answer. No, missed bucket. Penn's going to have possession back.
Let's
with
go,
an
boys.
Ability to either tie this game, Femi, with a 140 left, or even take the lead. We are not done yet by any means in Ithaca, New York, in the Ivy League Tournament Championship game.
Fran, I need your best stuff, man. Dial it up. I need your best stuff, Fran. We are going for the fight in Frans here, as they are trying to get the ball to Power. It's just like, so how is this going to go here? They're not even running anything. Guys are just like what is this? Just shoot the ball.
Huge rebound by Yale.
Just shoot the ball.
I mean, we're at 140 in total. If there's not a single point, or actually if there's just one more point scored, My under can come through.
Let's get it home.
Now. Listen, there's 65 seconds. We might have a chance.
You know what? Out of being a good teammate, I will concede the money line bet for you to get your under home and for me to get home with 9.5. Everyone wins here on Ready, Set, Bet. I don't know if there's not going to be any more scoring the rest of the way, but, you know, we can root for it at least in this Ivy League tournament.
It Townsend misses. Penn gets the ball back. We got 40 seconds left in a two-point game.
Penn's
got two timeouts. Fran McCaffrey just burned one.
38.2. Oh, my goodness.
The Quakers looking for their first berth in the Big Dance since 2018 are down by a bucket. They can either tie the game in the Ivy League championship or perhaps take the lead. And their stud, TJ Powers, got 34 of 69 total points for UPenn today.
If this doesn't get you fired up for what's to come later on tonight and later on this upcoming week, you don't have a pulse. Like, the bracket is almost out as the road to the championship officially begins this week. Give yourself the edge this tournament, this season, with VSiN's Hoops Mania. That's right. VSiN's Hoops Mania special. Get VSiN Pro access from now through May 1st for just $29.99. You're going to get all the hosts and guests real-time bets, the betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, all of it and more. And tomorrow, our March Mania betting guide drops with team profiles for every tournament team, round-by-round trends, bracket, and future strategies, and best bets from VSiN's experts. Sign up now, VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. As all eyes here on Ready, Set, Bet, Femi Ebefe, Ben Stevens hanging out with you guys, are on the Ivy League Tournament Championship in Ithaca, New York. I think you're like 5 seconds ahead of me. So I will let you give me the play-by-play. Like, I just tell me. I don't care that you're ahead. I just want to know what is going to happen here, and is my plus 415 potentially going to get to the window?
With our good friends at SiriusXM, I believe I have to describe, not give the full play-by-play here on Channel 158. So I will do my best. I have done this before. I can do it again. TJ Power got the matchup he wants on Yale's Mullen, but he pokes it free. That's going to remain with the Quakers. 23 seconds left, 8 seconds remaining on the shot clock. Penn still trails by 71-69. I mean, Femi, yesterday on Live Bet Saturday, Dustin and I went live as the Big Ten tournament title game between Michigan and Wisconsin was coming to a close, and as that A-10 semi between St. Louis was going back and forth. It was like, all right, here we are. It's March. It's championship weekend around conference tournaments, and we have that in our very first game of five on this championship Sunday ahead of the bracket being revealed. Timeout, I believe, called by Penn.
So they're out of timeouts. So Penn's
out of timeouts, Fran.
Yeah, that's a little interesting.
I mean, I guess this is the most important possession of their year, right? They're down by a bucket. They've got 8 seconds left on the shot clock, 23 in the game. They have to score. But interesting, you did call a timeout to set up this possession, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's out of timeouts. That's a little bit tricky. But at this point, though, because like, this is so tough, I don't want overtime, but I also want Penn to win. So like, is Fran dialing up a three-pointer here? Because that's what I want. I get it. We could do like the whole Princeton backdoor, all that stuff to try to get this thing tied up. But like, man, does Penn actually have, watching this game, I'm not so sure Penn has enough gas in the tank to like safely be in the number at 9.5. Like, I could see it being where it's like you're dancing around.
Yeah, for sure. If this goes to overtime, that could get a little bit dicey. Yale has been by far the better team in the second half, and certainly in the final 10 to 12 minutes or so, that defensive intensity is through the roof. Both of these teams playing for their season and a bid in the Big Dance. Yale trying to get there for a third consecutive season. They have been there 4 times in the last 5 years. Penn trying to see the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2018. They break the huddle. 23.1 ticks remaining in regulation. Quakers trailing by 71-69. They have the basketball. Sideline inbound. 8 seconds left.
Oh, please,
Penn. TJ Powers inbounding it, Femi.
Oh.
TJ Powers inbounding the
basketball. Oh, they're going for a three then. Get it back to him. Chuck the three, TJ. Let's go.
All right. Nick Townsend, the Ivy League Player of the Year for Yale, is on TJ Power. That's almost a five count. Oh, it wasn't a five count. Threw it into the backcourt. Only 5 left on the shot clock. Crazy heave. AJ Levine, the player for Penn, was just trying to get something up.
What?
Ball was out of control. Femi's watching it as we speak.
What?
And that's going to be nothing for Penn. Fran used his last timeout and is not happy with how that offensive structure looked by any means. Interesting here, Femi, 16.2 seconds remaining. Yale got the rebound. They got fouled. Ooh, that looked like a little grabby grab from the Mullen of the Bulldogs.
They have a couple fouls to give.
AJ Levine.
What the hell was that possession? We'll make sense of it as we begin hour number three of Ready, Set, Bet.